Hello, I'm Tyler Brulé, and this is The Big Interview here on Monocle 24. My guest today is a chef and entrepreneur. Her recipe books have sold over a million copies worldwide, and of course, she runs a Michelin-starred restaurant in London that's been going for almost 30 years. Ruth Rogers was born in the United States, moved to England in the late 60s to study design. With no formal training as a chef, she opened the River Cafe in the then-neglected area of Hammersmith in 1987 with the late Rose Gray. Only 10 years after its founding, the River Cafe was being honored with the French Star of Excellence for its rustic Italian cuisine and wonderfully laid-back atmosphere overlooking the Thames. Designed by Ruth's husband, renowned architect Richard Rogers, the River Cafe has withstood the test of time and changed the way Londoners eat. And I can say I'm a regular fixture in the dining room whenever I'm in London on a Sunday. And I'm happy to say that Ruth joins us here in studio at Majori House. To Ruth, always great to see you. I have to start because people who are not familiar with the restaurant scene in London and what has happened over the last decades, we've seen so many famous names in terms of not just chefs, but more the names that sit over the doors of great restaurants, which have become parts of bigger groups. And yet you've got perhaps the longest running independent show going. And I'm always sort of fascinated when I come in. As you know, I'm normally there on a Sunday.
We will love it when you come. We are waiting for you.
And it's amazing. You see the same scene. You see retention of staff. And of course, lots of great people have been through your kitchen. But, you know, I guess if this is a bit of a point for people who are listening, how do you sustain it?
Well, I think that it is quite unusual in terms of a restaurant that, or a business there for 30 years next year, so we have to start planning the party, to have one restaurant because, you know, everyone that we started with, from Jeremy King to Rolly Lee to Alistair Little, you know, those names, I suppose Sally Clark still has one restaurant. But, you know, the nature of it is you start a restaurant, you have your team, and you grow. And I think that in the early years, it took us quite a long time to grow because we were so tiny and we had, you know, there were two women doing this restaurant outside of the loop. And every time Rose and I thought about expanding, we expanded the River Cafe because we started so small. We had one bay and then we had two bays and then we had three. And then we broke through and made an open kitchen and we put in the wood oven. And we also were writing our books. And so we thought, every time we thought maybe we'll do another restaurant, we'll write another book instead. But always in the back of our mind, or in the front of our mind, was an ambition, you know. And the ambition was to be the best restaurant, the best Italian restaurant, to be a sustainable restaurant with people who worked for us, who felt cared for and looked after, and also in a very professional way performed. But we always went to look at other sites. We looked at other restaurants. We looked at other places. And nothing really, for us, made the grade of the view, of light, of having a garden, an open space on one floor without a kitchen underground. And, of course, the defining moment for us and for me was when Rose was diagnosed with cancer. And so I would say that the next 8 years were spent, you know, really working on her health, and being together and expanding the restaurant, writing two more cookbooks, and expanding the restaurant in terms of, we had a fire in 2008. And so rather than just kind of paint it white, which we could have, we reinvented it. Whereas before we had a small wood oven that you could see through a hole. We celebrated the wood oven. We put a private dining room in. We put new bathrooms in. We just changed the whole place in 2008. And then, of course, then there was a crisis. You know, one time people laugh. They said, well, every time Ruthie has a business plan, she says yes until then she says no. I don't know if this is answering your question. It's a rather long-winded way, which is that I do see the River Cafes growing and expanding and getting better. But we just have to wait until we find the right place to do it.
Mm. You just told a very evolutionary tale. And I like when you talk about, you know, sustainability. And the other thing I think about when I think about the River Cafe is this sense of community that you see familiar faces in the room, not just on, let's say, in the open kitchen, but the faces that greet you when you come in, who are behind the bar, etc. But then also just all the diners. I don't know all the people when I walk in. I know some people, but I do recognize those faces, and not from any sort of level of celebrity. Yeah, they're just, they're part of that family.
Yeah, I think people do feel there is a sense of family in the restaurant. You know, that for me, people always say, who are the celebrities that come in, and I could name them and tell them. But for people that we really, you know, love and nurture and care about are the people who come in, the regulars, you know, what we call the regulars, not the ins, but the regulars. And I think that, you know, the way people use the restaurant, people come in after a crisis and you think they want to go home and sit in their kitchen. And people who come in, you know, to celebrate, or just people come in, as you say, on Sundays with their kids and know that we're there, that there is a sense of closeness. And when we've had hard times, when we've had ups and downs, those people have supported me, you know.
I like when you mention just families coming in with their kids, because there is one feature about the restaurant, and you can talk about the hotly painted wood oven, but I like, and I've always wondered why more restaurateurs do not follow the River Cafe, I would say sort of a play pit that you have, which is just this wonderful thing in between, you know, being out on your terrace and the banks of the Thames. You've just got this wonderful stretch of grass, and kids are just out there playing. I mean, they suddenly you have this just eruption of maybe an impromptu football match or whatever it is. And kids who don't know each other, some are from, you know, bigger extended families. And that's oddly another sort of funny part, not that it's been done deliberately, but it's a little bit of Italy that's been brought to it. It reminds me of being in a piazza in a small town. Yeah. So was that also evolutionary, or that was just something that happened? That just organically just turned into what it became?
I think it probably was organic. I think that when Richard and his partners bought those warehouses, there was a building there. There was another building in front of the building. And I think the idea in the beginning was to create a community, and that the green space would be a place where people could sit and read their paper, have their lunch, and relax. And the idea was that in this very, they are quite tough buildings. They are industrial. They were warehouses for oil depository. And I think that the landscaping of it is really good because, as you say, it's not planted with garden beds. It's a green space and people can use it. And the way the children have taken it over is very exciting on the weekends, because you see how children react. You know, they go out there and, as you say, a child who's alone with his parents will suddenly take place in a game. We've had to sort of stop the ball games because, you know, a woman once wrote me a letter and said, no, she didn't like going to a restaurant and having a football turn into her turbot. But I thought, well, you know, that's the risk you take. But, you know, given that, they do play games. And I don't know about you, Tyler, but when I grew up, we went to restaurants for occasions. You know, we went for my mother's birthday. We went for my birthday. We went for graduation. We dressed up. We went out. And I lived in a small town in upstate New York. And the way we see people use restaurants now is a very different way. You see teenagers going out for breakfast. You see families coming with young children. You see, you know, grandparents taking their grandchildren. And it's become a place where, if you can afford it, you know, you can have a family time and nobody has to work and nobody has to, you know, prepare, and you're taken care of, and the children in the River Cafe can go and play. We had an event for the NSPCC, and I said in my opening, I said, you know, every Sunday you see these children playing outside, and they're safe children. They're children who are loved. They're children who know that if something happens on this, they can come inside. And you know, my point being, there are children who are frightened, who don't have that. So it is a really nice thing to see.
I'm intrigued by, you know, we talk about this play area for kids, but I think also for the parents and the adults as well. There's something about the River Cafe, which it is a refuge. We're going through a difficult patch in this country of late. And yet, as you said, of course, you know, you've had hard times. There's been kitchen fires, and we've all been through the various waves of what's hit the economy, the political mood in the country, etc. But you also enter into a world where, and I say it's a bubble in a positive way, that there is this consistency. And you can probably talk about the consistency of ingredients and making sure that you're turning out the best plate of frito, whatever it is going to be, every time. But I'm wondering how much of it really is also, you know, just making sure that the ambiance is also there. Of course, I'm going to come back for a great dish as well, but there's this extended family sense. Yeah, how do you do it? Because I think that's, I always feel you walk into a bit of a magic place every time.
I think there are a few levels of that. I really like the family image and the analogy, but I also have to say that there's a huge discipline, very professional core that makes the restaurant run. You know, we can be family and treat everyone as individuals, which we do, but somebody's coming in to have a great meal. And that is our goal, is to make sure that experience, whether it's knowing that their table is clean and their cutlery is well-placed and their food is beautifully cooked and they're made to feel better. That's the core. Now, how do you get that? I really firmly believe that, and I have to say right now that I'm only part of the restaurant and that it is my team. And I'm sure you've worked the same way, that you invest in the people who work for you. And that if you have a group of people working for you who have, as Lord Michael said in Saturday Night Live, he said, I want every one of my writers to turn the door, you know, in their house and go home to a good house when they go home. And I think I can't guarantee that because of London Property Pride, but I can make sure that they're well fed, that we feed them the food from the River Cafe. And so a chef cooks for them. And we all sit, everybody sits down to lunch, maybe not together, but, you know, the idea is everybody sits down at some point and has lunch. We make sure that all the chefs have 2 days off. They cannot work a week in which they do not have full 2 days off. We aim for everybody having one double. So there's only one day when they work. And if they do a double, they don't come in the next day in the morning. So they don't do three shifts
in a row.
And
for people who are not in the F&B world, you mean working a lunch and a dinner? Correct.
Yeah, sorry. Double. Yeah, they would come in at 8. In the River Cafe, you come in at 8 or, you know, 8:30 or 9, and you leave at 5:30 or 6. And then you come in at 3 and you leave at midnight. But if you do double, then you come in at 9 and you leave at midnight. Mm. But that's a long day. And so in many restaurants, it isn't. You can talk to other chefs who they work 5 doubles or 3 doubles and they have 2 days off. I don't know. But we started that way and we've kept to that. So I think you have people who are not tired. I hope they're well paid so that they can have a life. And they're well fed. And it's a restaurant that's run on hope rather than fear and, you know, all the things that we believe in, you and I. But underneath that, I do want to stress, it's very demanding to work in the River Cafe. Mm. You know, it's such a hard job and some people in the kitchen can't do it. They haven't worked in a kitchen like that where they have to perform so highly or they and on the floor, the way they dress. We don't have a uniform, but everybody has to wear a shirt that's well ironed with a bright color. You know? So we do have a discipline, but within that, Steve Jobs said the most important thing in business is to choose your team. Mm. And I say that the people who work around me are brilliant.
You're talking about creative capital. You're talking about the social capital that you have within the River Cafe. And you know, right now we have this question mark sitting over not just London, but also the UK about, is there going to be a flight of talent from here? And I'm wondering, you know, over the years, I think we've talked about, you know, you've said there's been so many offers to take the River Cafe on the road to cities all over the world. And I'm sure there's constant offers, maybe more offers than ever. Do you think there are unique forces in London, though, when you've even considered looking around thinking, could I do this restaurant in Hamburg? Could I do this restaurant in Dubai? Or do you think we have a rather special set of circumstances here, aside from, yes, your glorious location and the wonderful buildings, but when you think about the talent that comes on the service floor in the kitchen, does London offer you something that maybe other cities can't?
Well, the excitement of London, and I can't speak for other cities, and I would say probably my reluctance to go to Frankfurt or New York or Miami, places that I've been asked to go to, is to do with control. You know, that, you know, I think if you told me that you came in last Sunday and had a poor meal or, you know, your pasta was undercooked or overcooked or whatever, I would be able to probably work on that. I'd want you to tell me and I'd talk to the chef and see who was on and I have a piece of paper that tells me everybody who worked and da, da, da. If I'm in 3,000 miles away and you walked into Miami and went, why did they do this? It would be hard. But we probably could. I do think, and given the last week and given the last months and given what is going on in the world, that our great hope and advantage we have is diversity, is people coming in from all parts of the world. And I was interviewed about the European Union quite recently, of course, and I was an ardent Remainer. I got a list of the people who have British passports and who don't. And literally, I could have folded it in half lengthwise. And it was 50%. Mm. And the thought that I could have had a restaurant without that 50% who brought knowledge from Italy or brought knowledge from Prague or had a grandmother that made something this way or perhaps didn't speak English or a way of working, a way of dressing, it just gives us such breath. And, you know, I'm a grandchild of immigrants, you know, from the United States. So it is, for me, hugely important.
Mm. Just when you were talking about that sense of control, and I guess for foodies who are listening to this as well, I wanted to just talk about ingredients and process, because, you know, no matter what month you come to the River Cafe, there is the simplicity, you know, and there's a lot that goes into what arrives on the plate. The execution is always fresh and wonderful. What is the, let's say, the, and I hate to use the word supply chain, but of course that's the process to, of course, get things into the kitchen. How does it work? Because would that also be another stumbling block for you elsewhere in the world as well? Just thinking, you know your suppliers, et cetera. Yeah. So suddenly if, yes, you know, you have a sheikh or a property developer saying, come to Abu Dhabi, I imagine that would make things also equally challenging.
Yes, it would. We've worked with suppliers over the last 30 years. We have some suppliers that we've still worked with that we, when Rose and I opened the first day. And it's a really close relationship. One of the butchers once said to somebody else, one of the most terrifying calls was ever from Rose or myself saying, you know, that wasn't up to it. You know, we're sending it back. I mean, how dare you? But that's the negative. We also call them up and we get a fantastic box of mushrooms, or we have langoustine that come from Aberdeen. Most of our ingredients, we source our fish and our meat locally. So it comes from the waters around Devon, Cornwall. We have, nothing is flown in. I think probably nothing comes by plane except our wine and our mozzarella from Naples, which comes in twice a week. Everything else comes from the Milan market. We have to depend on the Milan market. We can't just depend on the British vegetable season, or we'd be quite limited.
And I'm fascinated by that. So that is someone there picking for you, or are there suppliers who just know that they will send you some? Okay.
Yeah, we go to Milan. I go to Milan two or three times a year, go to the market, talk to the person who chooses. But we use Natura, La Credenza. We have people who are, we can trust. And they know. So the boxes come in. They call up and they say, we have, you know, yellow peppers are just coming in, or the small peas, or the, well, we can actually buy English peas as well, you know, which is very exciting and wonderful. But we have ingredients that come in from the market. They're brought in, and then we have somebody who checks every box every morning. And the head chef is there, and they will come with the, say, do you want to take these broad beans? Look, they're bigger and they are more floury. And we'll say, yeah, because we can use them in something else that we could make a soup out of, or no, send them back. Mm. And then we take broad beans off the menu. People come to the River Cafe and say, sometimes in January, and say, I want it, this is an Italian restaurant, where's my tomato salad? And we go, sorry. Or people say, I ate here last week and I had, you know, we've had real problems getting squid at the moment. We change the menu twice a day. I'm working tonight and I'll go in at 3:00. And I know what's on. I know that I will have 3 fish and meat, and I know one of them. The last three months, we couldn't fish sea bass because the good old EU, you know, the European Union said it's not sustainable, and there was a ban on sea bass. So, which I liked. Bring them on. Bring on those rules. You know, I'm all for them. So it's changing all the time.
So is there a truck once every 2 weeks or once a week that comes to Milan? Or?
Oh, no, much more often. I think it comes 2 or 3 times a week, yeah.
And, you know, is that incredible that here we're talking about a world-famous market that exists in Milan, and also all the great things an open market brings you as well? And
exactly.
to imagine that suddenly that those trucks can't come 2 or 3 times a week, or they will still come, but there will be potentially tariffs on them. And I think this moment of, you know, this lack of leadership, but also this moment of indecision that we sit in is quite remarkable.
Yeah. No, I've had a really, I mean, for us, Europe has been crucial, you know, and with our ingredients, with our links to Italy. And as I said, I don't want to make this into a case for the EU, the rules they have on health and hygiene are great. You know, I've really, people say, oh, it's a bureaucracy and they do all these terrible things. For me, in my business, it's been really positive.
Mm. And I think that's, and again, we don't want to go too off tangent, but I think probably many of our listeners will appreciate it, that there is, you know, so much of what has happened through the EU construct, you know, is about best practice, because the Finns decided to do something and then maybe the Danes improved it. And then it goes up the chain and this becomes best practice across a variety of things.
Exactly. If we're involved, and again, not to go off message, but the sad thing, I think, looking back, is that there's been so little media or television or knowledge of the good things.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we turn on the TV and see on the news what great things that have been happening.
Now, I think this is what we've talked about is, I think, the great failure. Before we went on air, you and I said, you know, could more have been done? I thought, you know, did we wade into the debate too long? Did we? Yes, you know, we're not a public service broadcaster. You know, we've, of course, we want to be part of this European project, and I think very much Remainers as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe we should have put our flag up much, much earlier. Of course, we did well beforehand. But as you said, there is, you know, an extraordinary positive message. And I think what the River Cafe delivers is this amazing sense of quality of life and what diversity of cuisine and people on the floor are able to bring. Does it give you, I guess, a sense right now, because you've looked at also other parts of London as well, do you have that sort of burning desire, and maybe does this propel you forward even more to think, what else could we do? Yeah.
No, we are thinking about it. I was very close to doing another restaurant, and we were all very excited about it. We worked on the project, which was in the heart, center of London. And that was really driven by site, because it was a little bit out of the main area. You had to find it. We could have pedestrianized the area. It had landscaping. It was industrial. It was an old car park. The reason that I did was not because I suddenly wanted to open another restaurant, but because we loved that site. Mm. And so that didn't happen for all sorts of reasons. But I've already had so many calls. I think we're going to take a little break. And we're very safe where we are. That's a great thing, because for a bit we thought, we didn't know if they were going to redevelop the site. And so we're all feeling much more calm there and reassured and given leases, and they're not going to redevelop for the near future anyway. So I think we're focusing on what we can do, but there are some ideas that I have.
Maybe you are the shining example of build it and they will come, because it's not the easiest location. And I think when I try to come from the center of London to go to the River Cafe, you know, they built that massive Westfield Mall, trying to get around that on a Sunday, all of these. But yet you go and you're excited about going. So, as you said, location, of course, important, but it's also, I guess, the construct of what is available in terms of buildings and everything else. But yet people make the pilgrimage. And I'm wondering, is there an appeal in that? I think when everything becomes so available and everything is ubiquitous, and I guess, we've seen many restaurants which had one door in London, which suddenly have four. Yeah. They're just not so appealing anymore. And I guess that goes back to your point about control and all of these things. You know, my feeling is good restaurant managers do not grow on trees or in gardens.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. We have a very core team and great team. But, you know, I always tell about the location, the story that we had a woman who had eaten, and I said, do you want a taxi? She could call me a taxi. She was American. We said, where are you going? And she said, London. You know, so there was a sense that she sort of felt she was out in the countryside. But I think that sometimes I am amazed that people come to the River Cafe because of, as you say, the traffic, the distance, the time it takes and everything else. But I always say that I would, you know, I love places and I'd cross London to go there, and then I very rarely cross London. But I have been in the River Cafe when we're full, and then I come into the West End and you think people could just walk there and the restaurants aren't. You know, I'm so pleased people do come. If you call up, we can tell you the best route to take so that you don't have to go through Hammersmith Broadway or, you know, there's sort of little tricks to get there. And once you're there, you can stay and have a good time.
I'm keen. I think I know the answer, but I have to ask anyway. Mm. What type of diner is Ruthie Rogers when you might be in Italy or you or some other point in the world? Are you keen to go and benchmark and see what other people are doing? Or is it just this desire to find that place which is just delivering great ingredients and you don't really care about the setting as long as the food and the service is good?
I care about a restaurant in the whole. You know, I will sit through a delicious food and maybe not have such good service, or vice versa, have great service and feel very welcome and comforted, but maybe the food wasn't. I'd like to think that a critical diner, but that I'm also quite understanding. It is a really, really difficult thing to create good food and serve it well. And so I think that people always say, oh, I couldn't possibly have you over for dinner. And in fact, I'm so in awe and so impressed by anybody who cooks and makes an effort and tries to cook. And so I'm a really appreciative diner. I think I'm not a good one for the kind of old-fashioned, pompous place. I'm also quite happy sometimes to go to a place where there's an air of formality and you feel slightly humbled and slightly scared and all that. You know, there's a sort of, well, probably not. Actually, I wouldn't say I want to go somewhere I feel scared, but I do respect the kind of old-fashioned Paris three stars where you dress up to go out. We rarely eat out in Italy. We cook at home. But when we do go out in the summer to, there's a few little places which when you come and visit me, I'll take you to, that are just, you know, you're just there because you're having a beautiful square and you're sitting there and you've had a long day and you've maybe driven and they bring you out a pasta or a bolito and you're very happy.
When you hear the name Richard Rogers, a lot of people don't associate a family connection to the world of Trieste and Italy.
Yeah.
And how much has your husband's background also informed what ends up on the table and in terms of an approach to, quality of life and delivering day in and day out outstanding dishes for your customers?
That's a good question. I think that my first introduction to food was really in Paris, you know, because we lived in Paris for 6 years. And the French and the way they, I say, we looked through our checkbook and every single check was spent on discovering food, and it was kind of time of nouvelle cuisine, that's how old I am, in sort of the 70s, and exploring French food. But for me, the revelation was going with Richard to his family in Florence. And his mother was born in Trieste, and a woman who then came to London during the war, came from quite a pampered family and suddenly was in wartime Britain and wanted to eat well and, you know, wanted to continue that, but was struggling with the ingredients. But she did it. She made zabaglione with Bristol cream sherry and rum instead of, you know, marsala. And she found ways of making a risotto with dried mushrooms that she could find. And so she really influenced the way I looked at food. And then that was further developed when I went and actually spent more and more time in Italy. The first occasion I had was to stay in one of Richard's cousin's houses, and I heard this huge fight going on downstairs, and I sort of hid for a while, and then I went down to the kitchen, and there were two sisters arguing about whether you should put water in the papa pomodoro with the tomato or not. You know, one wanted to just make a thick tomato sauce and add the bread, and the other one thought you should put a bit of boiling water, and I thought, this is the kind of argument I like, you know. And so, and Richard is a really good eater, and he is someone who can come in and talk to me about total honesty about what he ate or what he likes. And we have, obviously, you know, having been together for so long, we vote the same way and we eat the same way and we like restaurants the same way. But the Trieste-Florence connection is huge.
Just before we wrap up here, I'm intrigued on that Italian note. Was it always that way? Because you paint a lovely picture of that nouvelle moment that existed in Paris in the 70s and, of course, how that spread around the world. We can remember then also, as a child growing up with magazines in the 70s, I can remember all, you know, everything that my mom and my, all of them, when you had Gourmet at Home and all these things.
Sure.
And sure, how the photography changed and how that whole approach of a reportage of restaurants. But was it always going to be Italy in your mind, or was this moment that you thought, well, I could go down several channels in terms of what I was going to do in terms of the cuisine you deliver?
Yeah, I think it was certainly my great, you know, just Paris was, you know, an explosion. We lived over the market in Saint Antoine in the Marais, and seasonality and going to the market, seeing what's there, and then coming home and cooking. And of course, Julia Child and Simone Beck. Simone Beck was actually living in Paris. But then when I went to Italy, I thought, this is it. This is the food that I want to cook for the rest of my life, and this is the food I want to eat. I want to continue eating French food. I have huge respect. And when Rose and I opened the River Cafe, she came from exactly the same feeling because she'd lived in Lucca for 5 years. And so there was never any doubt. And we haven't feared, you know, people say, wouldn't you like to try and do something else or do another? Do you ever make a curry at home? And, I love to eat curries and I love, you know, Japanese food, and, you know, when I have any chance I can get, I'll have a Lebanese breakfast. But for me, the source is Italy.
Ruthie Rogers, hearing that you're in the kitchen tonight, I'm thinking that perhaps I might have to make my way down because I'm probably not going to be back in London for a little stretch. Always great to see you.
Good idea.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tyler.
And you've been listening to The Big Interview with me, Tyler Berlay, in conversation with Ruth Rogers. The Big Interview is produced by Bill Lutie, researched by Gaia Lutz, and edited by Claire Crofton. Until next time, all that's left to say is goodbye. See you soon.